action. Hey there, movie kings and queens. Welcome to episode 79 of the Real Gay Movie Show. I'm your host, Mike Lovins, and with me, as always, the wisest of all pennies, my co-host, Ryan Provost.
You just say that because I'm only worth a cent to you.
I'm just saying, I'm interested in your 2 cents worth of advice. How about that?
Okay, as long as it's two.
Well, how you doing, Ryan? Welcome, welcome.
I'm all right. Life is busy and crazy right now.
Yeah?
But, so going to a movie is actually kind of a nice getaway.
A respite.
It's been a while since we've gone to a movie, actually.
I know.
Or at least reviewed one on here.
Yeah, I was excited to go back to the movie theater and because we've had stuff going on and or last week there really wasn't much to see, so I was excited.
Although it's crazy, and I know we're gonna get into this, but I am not even close to seeing as many movies this year as I saw last year. But then I look at what's coming out later this year, and there's so much I want to see in these last few months. It's going to be hard to get to all these.
Yeah, I think that's where the that Letterboxd list is going to fill up.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to have a lot of like cramming two movies into one episode weeks coming up, folks.
Yeah, we might do that.
There's just so much. Yeah. There's so much to see. Which brings us to the
Toronto International Film Festival is either going on or just finished up. I think it
still goes on this week as well. I don't think it's wrapped up yet.
I think you might be right. But actually, before we get to that, I wanted to mention real quick, because we've been talking about Joker. And did you see that it won the Golden Lion, the top prize at the Venice Film Festival?
I did.
I just wanted to bring that up because that's very exciting to me.
Which the last two movies that won that award were Green Book and Shape of Water, if that says anything.
So it means that I'm really going to like it and you might not.
Well, I was thinking more of its Oscar chances.
Okay.
Those are the last two Best Picture winners. But if you go back before that, it's more foreign films that win that award more often. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't Green Book last year. It was Roma. But Roma was very much in the conversation, too.
Yeah.
Other than those two in the last couple years, there haven't been a ton of American movies, which I think maybe even says more about how well-received Joker is so far.
Yeah, so very
exciting.
And
it's going to be at TIFF as well.
Yep. So speaking of TIFF then, so there's a website that I follow, Collider.com. So I have...
Are they a sponsor?
They are not.
Then why are you mentioning their goddamn name, Mike?
Because a lot of what I'm going to say is stuff that they quoted, so I want to make sure...
Oh, so you're just stealing and repeating their
stuff? Sure, I'm making sure that the... well,
citing
I'm,
them in their...
I'm
in
not
your
at
bibliography.
TIFF, so these opinions aren't mine.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So I wanted to kind of talk about some of the movies that they've seen and what they've said. So starting off with Jojo Rabbit, they said it's the sweetest, funniest film featuring Nazis you'll ever see.
Clearly they haven't seen The Producers.
Right. Or
Indiana Jones.
I was going to say Schindler's List.
Oh God.
But they also said it's absolutely the kind of film young viewers should see. Kids should learn why fascism is both harmful and ridiculous.
Well, good.
So I think that's,
here's my worry. I feel like there's going to be so much unintelligent outrage about this movie.
I agree.
I think there's going to be a lot of people who probably won't even see the movie, who will criticize it for making Hitler seem like a funny, comedic, or lighthearted character. And I think there's going to be some outrage and people upset about this movie. I think that may even cost it any chances at the Oscars, but I get that feeling that's coming. Don't you?
I absolutely. It's going to be a lot of, like you said, a lot of people giving their opinions on a movie they didn't even see.
So, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. The only thing I took out of that was that they said that Tom Hanks shines as Mr. Rogers. So
that's shocking. About time Tom Hanks was good in a movie. Right. He got his breakthrough performance. Good for him.
This might finally be his year.
He needed a break.
Yeah. Now, here's one that I'm excited about. Go ahead.
You're going so fast.
Okay.
I'm actually really, as much as I did not like Won't You Be My Neighbor, not hated it or anything.
You poo-pooed quite a bit
but
on
it. I just, it wasn't for me, right? Sure. I am more excited for this telling of it because I think it will be a little more critical and dramatic.
Yeah.
And a little more, maybe even a little more lighthearted and fun than I felt like Won't You Be My Neighbor was.
That's fair.
Especially considering Can You Ever Forgive Me? Same director is directing this. And I loved the tone of that movie. I think this one, if it matches that kind of tone, I think it could be a lot of fun.
Which I just saw that Can You Ever Forgive Me is on HBO this month. So I want to make sure I watch that.
Do it.
Got to see that again.
Richard E. Grant was robbed.
Give him his Oscar. Knives Out.
Yes.
So they said Rian Johnson's whodunit is a masterful delight. The world needs more movies like Knives Out. While Knives Out is thematically rich, technically outstanding, and superbly acted, it's also just a complete and total blast of a movie.
Yeah, but does it stay faithful to Star Wars canon?
I hope not.
I'm glad Rian Johnson is doing something different and original that won't be bogged down with, no offense, but with unrealistic expectations from an unruly and sometimes overdramatic fan base.
What?
Yeah. I went there.
That is, of course, until he starts his next Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it just goes to show, though. I mean, like,
America's ass is in this movie.
That's right.
Ugh. Yes. And Britain's ass.
And apparently,
talking about Daniel Craig.
Yeah, and what I've heard is somebody said that from now on he should only do Southern accents. That apparently he just kills it, or is just hilarious doing that. But
sure,
yeah, okay,
whatever gets him away from being Bond.
Yeah. So those have been some pretty positive reviews coming out of there. The last one that I took note of, unfortunately, isn't as glowing. And it's for The Goldfinch.
Oh.
It says, it's a tedious chore. The Goldfinch is not only a vapid prestige picture, it's also grotesque. They gave it an F.
People say the same about Sex With Me, if I'm being honest. And I think those reviews are also unfair.
A tedious chore.
Yeah.
Grotesque.
Vapid.
Yeah. I get it.
F.
I'm sure. Yeah. So I'm really disappointed to hear that because for some reason I had kind of high hopes about this movie.
Well, I had some boots on the ground. My good friend who you've met, Amanda, was up in Toronto for TIFF and went to a few screenings. She said that The Goldfinch was great, but it was long as hell.
Okay.
So, but she said she's biased because she really liked the book.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that then because, and that's what I had heard was that it was a fantastic book. So that's what made me kind of excited about the movie.
But her favorite she loved Bad Education, which is a comedy that has Hugh Jackman and Allison Janney.
Okay.
Which I especially love Allison Janney. So that could be,
they sound like an interesting pairing.
Yeah. So that could be fun. That she said that was her favorite. She also really liked How to Build a Girl, which has a Beanie Feinstein. Feinstein from Booksmart.
Okay.
And she was great in that, so would love to see her in something else again. And she said Just Mercy, have you seen the trailer for that one? Has Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx and Brie Larson.
Oh, I think I have heard of this
one. She said it was incredible. She's wrecked. She cried a ton. So I'm excited for that one.
Where's our invite to these festivals?
Right. I'm going to sneak in next year. But the other movies, you mentioned a lot of the ones I'm excited about. The two you didn't mention that based on the buzz I'm hearing about them. One is Marriage Story. Have you seen anything?
Oh, yeah.
So that one is about a couple that's going through a divorce, starring Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. So we're going to see a lot of Adam Driver.
And Scarlett Johansson.
The end of this year.
She's in Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, he's in this. He's in Star Wars. And he's in another movie called The Report, which was also at TIFF.
Okay.
So we're going to, yeah, there's going to be a lot of Adam Driver out there. But
I don't hate it.
There's two trailers for this movie. It was really cool how they did it. One is from his perspective and one is from her perspective. So the trailers kind of mirror each other, but one trailer, she's narrating everything. The other trailer, he's narrating everything. Yeah, it's really cool. The movie is going to be released on Netflix in early December, but it's going to be in select theaters throughout November. So hopefully it'll show at one of the theaters here.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a Gateway or Drexel type thing, but if not.
And then the other one, I think I talked about this movie when we did our Fierce Five horror movies of all time, but The Witch is one of my favorite horror movies. It was from a first-time director named Robert Eggers.
Yeah, you've mentioned that a couple times.
Yeah, I love that movie. His next movie is premiering at TIFF, or premiered, past tense probably. And it's called The Lighthouse, and it's black and white, just stars Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe as two lighthouse keepers. Looks like they just go insane and crazy shit happens. And with how crazy The Witch was and how good those two actors can be, I'm really excited to see.
Willem Dafoe can definitely do creepy.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see that one. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Not fun.
Well,
because I wouldn't describe The Witch as fun, but just jaw-dropping and crazy and wild.
Fun can be interpreted many different ways.
Another thing I have on my Grindr profile.
Exactly, right?
Yep.
Tedious, grotesque, and fun, depending on how you look at it.
With an asterisk. Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hopefully one of these years we get to go to one of these festivals.
Let's get a press pass or something. I don't know. Whose dick do I gotta suck to get a VIP to one of these?
There's probably at least one or two that would be willing.
Yeah.
You know, I just got to address something here. Based on last week's episode, I noticed you're wearing this shirt that's like really low cut, showing the chest on your hair, and you haven't shaved your face.
The chest on my hair?
Yep.
Are you distracted, Mike?
I am. Wolf.
Okay, so I'm trying to get the last little bit of summer. It's not even summer anymore, but I'm just trying to, I'm going to be retiring these clothes very shortly. And so I'm trying to just get the last little bit. It's supposed to be warm. It's warm out today.
Yeah. Enjoy it while you can. That's for sure.
What I'm doing.
That's for sure.
Don't read me like that in front of all these people.
All right.
How dare you?
The chest on your hair. Okay. So this week we are talking about It Chapter 2. And if you haven't heard of It Chapter 1, you
said it in a very condescending way.
Then where the hell have you been? No, so here's
some sort of jackass who hasn't heard of It Chapter 1.
Yeah, well, fuck you then. Yeah. What are you listening to this show for? Okay, so the synopsis. 27 years after their first encounter with the terrifying Pennywise, the Losers Club have grown up and moved away until a devastating phone call brings them back. They're calling from inside the house. That's a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. directed by Andy Muschietti, who directed the first one, who, by the way, is supposed to be directing the Flash movie when DC gets going on that.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm sure they're right on that.
Yeah, right. So, my initial thoughts.
Whoa, okay. I say we back up.
Okay, back up.
What were your thoughts on It Chapter 1?
Okay. Fair place to start. I loved it.
Yeah.
At that point, I had not read the book or seen the 90s miniseries. So I went into...
Didn't you just recently watch the 90s?
I did.
Yeah, tell me about that experience.
Okay. It's interesting.
Uh-huh.
I think if you'd seen it as a kid, it would have been scary. You know, they say that that Pennywise in that movie, played by, oh shit, what's it?
Tim Curry.
Tim Curry, thank you. That it was an iconic performance. And at 40-something, it's more goofy than scary, you know? It doesn't, in my opinion, hold up very well. So I wish I'd seen it when I was younger.
Yeah.
It was, though, interesting to watch it after seeing both of the new It movies to see how they handled some of the storytelling and what they kept in and from the book and what they left out. So
sure.
I don't like recommend it as like, if you've never seen it, you definitely have to check this out, but
it was, yeah, it's not in my queue.
Yeah.
I feel like through the clips I've seen enough.
Yeah.
Of what I need to see of that.
Yeah. I was series. I was more curious than anything,
but it's kind of crazy to think that they made on network television, because you couldn't show anything on network television back in the 80s, 90s, whenever this was made.
Yeah.
So the fact they made a horror miniseries where the beginning of the story contains a child murder is kind of wild to think about.
Yeah. Obviously not as gruesome, but
well, yeah.
But the, you know, they had some blood, which of course just looks like red paint.
Right.
But
so yeah, so not as high on that, but very high on It Chapter One.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Very high on that. In fact, just retroactively, I'd give it a 3.5 reels.
See, I was even higher on it. It was I just looked at my Letterboxd from 2017, my favorite movies that year. It Chapter One came out before we did the podcast, but it would have been my 5th favorite movie that year.
Okay.
Of the ones I saw, it would have been a 4 reels for me. I loved the way that that story was told, and especially the performances in it I thought were really strong.
Yeah.
I think where I've only read the Wikipedia of the book and where that goes, and that story is so weird.
I just started listening to the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The story is so weird, and I think they did a really great job of crafting it in a way that took out the over-the-top weird stuff and left in the heart of the story. And
no cosmic turtles.
No cosmic turtles. Just slight turtle illusions.
Yeah.
And it was it was a really fun movie. One of the better Stephen King movie adaptations for sure.
What I love about it too is that regardless of how you feel about It Chapter 2, It Chapter 1 is so well contained that if you like that movie, you can just watch that one.
You can do the Godfather thing. We talked about the Godfather last week. You can do the Godfather thing where you only watch chapter one and you don't even have to acknowledge a chapter two, which should we get into our thoughts on chapter two and whether or not we acknowledge it?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
Well, okay. First, let's play a game.
Okay.
Our normal game. So first of all, okay, let's back up for a second. What do you think was, I'm pulling it up now, what do you think was the Rotten Tomatoes score for It Chapter 1?
Oh, good question. I'm going to say like 83%.
It's actually 86%.
Okay.
So even better. Ooh, let's see if they have the miniseries on here. I wonder if they do. Oh, I don't see it. So, okay, but let's what about It Chapter 2?
So what's funny, somebody at work today tried to tell me the score and I cut him off. I was like, don't tell me. I don't think it would be as high. I'm gonna say 78.
Ooh, even lower than that.
Really?
Yeah, 64%. Okay. So still fresh, but
still fresh, but it needs a mint.
Wow. But did you see how much money it made this weekend?
I did. It was like $90 million.
$91 million this week. So it was a huge hit.
Yeah.
For sure. And yeah, this is a very successful ending of this story.
Sure.
So yeah, with that, Initial thoughts.
My initial thoughts are that it was a good movie. I had fun with it. I enjoyed it. Too long.
Mm-hmm.
There are some parts in this movie where it just drags out, and I'll get in where later where I think they could cut. But a couple scenes in the movie that took me a little bit of time to process, and I think I'm still processing them, but we'll get to that too. Overall, I'd say if you were a fan of the first movie, I think you definitely owe it to yourself to at least see part two, finish out the story. I did, like I said, I liked it. I would see it again. I did not like it nearly as much as the first one, though.
Yeah, I'm in a very similar boat as you. I think it was fine.
Yeah.
And even good enough. But I fully agree. It was too long. No horror movie should get even close to 3 hours. And this one rubs right up against it. It's like 249, something like that. And it just, that's too damn long for a horror movie. It's too damn long for most movies, but definitely a horror movie. So they definitely stretched it out a bit unnecessarily. And I have some ideas for where they could have cut some stuff off, mostly in that one of the things that was so great in It Chapter One is it wasn't all about the mythology. They didn't do all this explanation of what it was.
Yes.
It was more about the kids and it and Pennywise being a symbol of something. Whereas in this movie, there's so much exposition. Mm. There's so much. And I know that that's how it is in the book as well. But there's just so much.
That's what it's supposed to be like that.
Let's explain what this is and how we can defeat it. And it just gets a little convoluted and a little just, I mean, it involves aliens and different dimensions and shapeshifters and Native American rituals and artifacts and
talisman
and texts, old ancient texts and peyote or something for some reason.
Yeah.
All it just gets weird and all in the service of going out of its way to overly explain what it is.
Right.
And I just thought that was the weakest part of this movie.
I agree.
It strayed too far away from the characters. And we spent so much time in It Chapter One investing into these characters and bringing them back as adults. The key that you get there is we get to see them as adults and remember what we love about them and root for them again. And we don't really get to do that as much as we want because of all the service this movie feels like it has to serve to explaining what's going on.
This movie does a lot of flashbacks that I actually feel are unnecessary. That's one of the things that I feel like could have been cut. You know, the first movie was just the kids.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have gotten away with making this movie with just the adults. We've already been introduced to the characters. We knew who they were as kids. I think they should have focused more. They have this amazing cast. And we don't spend enough time with them.
Yeah.
In fact, that's one of my things is that I felt like despite the movie being too long, the introductions to the adult characters and where they are now felt too rushed.
I can see that. I can see that. Maybe because of how long the movie is, I don't agree. But right. I definitely see where you're coming from. I think that's a valid point. Yeah. Because we are just kind of given those quick introductions to where they are now before they get the phone call from Mike telling them
come back to
come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the issues that I had there.
That brings up. So with the flashbacks to the kids, one, I think that one of the reasons that was done is because they realized that they really did have something great with these kids.
Yeah.
And reminding us of them was almost as important, I think, to the filmmakers as reminding us of who Pennywise was, right? Because we had such an emotional attachment. But I think one of the big reasons for the flashbacks was to show us the artifacts they have to find. And we'll get into spoil. I don't think that's much of a spoiler, but
right.
the adults have to find these artifacts from the first time they encountered it. Why weren't we introduced to those in the first movie?
Well,
that should have been something we should have seen all of. We saw some of them in the first movie. We didn't see all of them. And I don't want to get into what the artifacts are because that might be kind of spoilery, but we're introduced to some of them in this movie. And it feels like, okay, that should have been in chapter one.
So to the best of my knowledge, that is not a plot point in the book.
I don't care.
No, wait. But what I'm saying is I don't know that that was written at the time that they wrote the first movie.
But these movies aren't written in some sort of stone that we have to pull out of a thing. They could have done something else.
And, I mean, I agree. Yeah. I think that whole
clearly,
thing was dumb. I don't like that.
They knew they were making this movie. I mean, when I saw It Chapter One opening weekend, and at the end of the movie, the big thing reveal is It Chapter Two is going to come.
Well,
so they knew they were going to do it.
You'd think if they knew everything that they were had coming up, though, they would have filmed those flashback scenes with those kids immediately. They filmed those now and then CGI de-aged the kids.
Okay, I thought they did.
Yeah.
Did you read that or did you just
assume it?
No, I... Because I kind of assumed it and I thought it looked kind of bad.
Yes, I agree. And there's a couple times where I particularly noticed it.
Yeah, too. It was really weird that they cast Patrick Stewart to play young Beverly and just de-aged him to play her.
That was a very odd decision.
It was.
Yeah.
He did a good job of hiding the accent, though.
And his balls. Wow. So that's why I feel like the stuff that, you know, those flashback scenes and the idea of these artifacts and stuff wasn't in play yet.
I don't care. Like,
I know you don't care. I don't care either. I'm just saying that I think the decision to do that then was a poor one.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. That's my point. That should have been in the first movie if it was going to be such a big plot point in the second movie.
Right.
It feels like they did not think ahead to the second movie, which they obviously should have, knowing the potential of this movie and knowing that the book has that second part that they could easily go make the second movie off of. So it was just poor planning, really. And it makes this one feel a little clunkier.
Yeah.
And not as connected to the first movie. If you see as many movies as we do, you can tell how movies, especially think about something like the MCU, there's clearly a master plan. There's clearly an architect who knows there are these other movies coming and everything in one movie builds at least a little bit into this larger narrative. The people responsible for it did not even do that for a 2-movie story arc.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have known.
Yeah.
They should have had scripts for both movies. They should have had the outlines. They should have just committed to both movies from the get-go. They were relatively cheap to make. The second one only cost $55 million, and that's with a higher caliber of celebrity movie star that they
and
had in
CGI.
I don't think they went that much more intense with the CGI in this one than the first one.
I mean, from what I've heard, that de-aging technology is not cheap. So like a good part of I guess there's not a whole lot of it in the movie, but some of the budget went to that, obviously. I didn't even care for some of the CGI that they did with Pennywise. I felt like some of that was kind of wonky too.
Eh.
But, you know, all that being said, though, you know, I still think that they gave us a pretty good movie. But
it was a decent movie. Probably not the most satisfying conclusion.
Right. And it's certainly not a movie that can stand on its own.
No, 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 no. Whereas I totally agree with what you said. It Chapter One can stand on its own. You can completely ignore this second movie and just watch that one, which is honestly probably what I'm going to do anytime I revisit this going forward.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this one just has enough issues. And I mean, as I'm talking about it, I'm kind of feeling like I maybe should even give it a lower grade than what I'm going to, but I don't know. It is fine. It has some good moments. It has some good callbacks to the first movie. It has some good scares. I do actually, for the most part, kind of like the adult performances. And
I thought they were great.
Yeah.
I thought it was
pretty well cast.
Yeah. I just felt like there wasn't enough of the group together. Like that was part of the thing that made the first one so great, is the Losers Club being all together for the most part. And
and there was a good chunk of this one where they had to kind of split up.
Where they're split up.
They make a point of it, actually.
And that's actually where this movie takes a big dip for me.
Yes and no. I think there were some parts that were stronger than others. So this isn't a spoiler because it's in the trailer, but I really liked Beverly's scene going back to her old house. And I think that the studio probably knew that because they made it
an entire trailer.
I kind of wish that hadn't been given away. I thought it was a really cool, creepy scene. Some of the others not as strong.
Yeah.
But whatever.
I did like Bill Hader's.
I'll get into that.
Okay.
I'll get into that later, but I know why you liked it.
Yeah. One of the criticisms I have of this movie over the first one is the first one I thought was genuinely scary. I felt like this one relied too much on jump scares but overall it just wasn't scary. At least from my point of view.
Do you think any of that was because it was too bogged down in all this mythology?
Could be.
I mean, what makes things scary is the mystery, what we don't know about them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what makes something scary. And this movie spent so much time explaining exactly what it is. And that kind of demystifies it and makes it less scary because you know exactly what it is. So when it does these kooky things, you're like, oh, well, yeah, it can do that because it's this and this is the mythology and whatever. Whereas if you leave that stuff a little more mysterious, then I don't know.
Well, let's go ahead and get into spoilers.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
All right, spoiler alert. So they're saying Pennywise is an alien? Like, so that really threw me off because I'm like, and I haven't gotten to figure out yet if that's part of the book or not, but I don't know. It seemed to take the creepiness factor out of it. And all of a sudden then I'm in a sci-fi mode trying to, you know, think about this creature coming down from.
Yeah. It's like an alien from a different dimension.
Yeah.
That's what the turtle is. The turtle is also from the same dimension.
Yeah. And that's right. That's true. Yep.
So Bill or something. What it, I mean, yeah. Truly what I've seen and heard and read about the book, it really gets weird.
Yeah.
It's super crazy and super out there. And I think what we ended up seeing was even a little toned down from that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know that aspect of it. I don't like, you know, if it were some mystical spirit or just an entity that's been haunting the planet but an alien from another dimension, it takes the scariness away from me for some reason.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily take the scariness away. It just makes it, it's not the best route to go.
Right.
It's the only route you can go to be faithful to the novel, but it's not a great route to go.
But see, they already changed so much about it. Cause from what I understand, the artifacts, the talisman, that is not part of the original story. The ritual that's not part of the original story. So they already
the ritual is.
Okay, well,
the ritual of chewed or chud or whatever it is.
Chiyun or whatever it is. But
it's not done that same way apparently, but
the artifacts portion, which ended up being a big part of this movie, isn't part of the original.
All that's to say, from me, there it got too convoluted.
Yeah.
There, movies are great because of what they symbolize, what they represent. And when a movie spends so much time explaining what's going on, instead of just focusing on the message it's trying to send or the themes it's trying to focus in on, then it gets bogged down and gets dragged out and loses its focus. And I feel like that's what happened with this. They just lost the focus that made the first one. Because in the first one, I don't think there was that pressure to overly explain what was going on. And it ends in that ambiguous note where they're all, if this ever happens again, we'll come back together. I feel like this one should have been a little more ambiguous. I don't think that would have hurt it. I don't think audiences would have been upset. Maybe some stupid people, I don't know, wow, would have been upset. I don't know. Like, I don't need to know. I don't need a full explanation of everything going on. I'm fine with some ambiguity because we don't always know everything that's going on.
Right. And that's kind of life. It doesn't matter where this thing came from. We have to stop it.
Right. I don't need an 8 minute scene, 8 to 10 minute scene of one character roofying and
right
and showing another some psychedelic trip to give us a full explanation of what's going on. It made the movie worse significantly.
Now I do, one of the things though that I thought about this movie that I didn't dislike this, but I kind of thought that this movie had a more of a Nightmare on Elm Street kind of vibe. Like Pennywise was kind of Freddy Krueger-ish in this movie. I felt like the way he was coming back to each of the individuals was very Freddy Krueger-ish, like to me. Like especially like Eddie's scene where he's goes down to the pharmacy and sees his mom, and you know, that kind of reminded me of something that like Freddy would do.
Yeah, because he knows their fears and can alter reality.
Yeah, well, it's right, but I mean, because he has the same powers, and it's just,
except it's not in a dream world, it's in the real world. Yeah, he used a lot of the same methods to scare the kids.
Yeah, all right, whatever.
Oh, I'm just trying to, I don't understand what else is that's and what other ways does it feel like a Nightmare on Elm Street movie?
In action and tone, just the movie to me kind of felt more like a Nightmare on Elm Street movie than whereas the first one felt like a Stand By Me type movie. How about that?
Okay. Well, if you're saying that, then that would mean that this one felt more like a horror movie than the first one.
More like a campy horror movie.
Okay. Now I'm getting at what you're trying to say.
Okay.
So you're saying this one got a little too campy for you.
Yes.
Okay. See, I pulled it out of you.
Okay.
I was able to get where you're... Okay.
Most people pull it out of me.
Hi, Pete. Just kidding. Pete never pulls out.
Nah.
I don't know. I think to some extent, I think there is a little bit of fan service to, I mean, whereas in the first one, Pennywise kills one kid and this one he kills two. there's a little bit more of the Pennywise, like that. I feel like it was a little fan service-y to have Pennywise, you know, bite into people. That was really just an iconic scene from that happens once in the first one. It happens a couple of times in this one.
Yeah.
So yeah, sure. There's some of that campy fan service-y kind of stuff, I think, that was included.
Okay.
As a reaction. Sure.
Sure. One of the things that they changed from the book / miniseries was that originally the character of Mike is stabbed by the bully guy, Henry, and he's in the hospital, so he doesn't end up helping at the end. He's not part of that end scene. What I kind of like that they changed in this one, because I really like the Eddie character. So the stabbing him in the face, was new for this interpretation of the movie. And that scene to me, I just thought was hilarious. Well, I mean, just, I love when people get stabbed in the face.
Hilarious when he got stabbed in the face.
No, just
a real knee slapper.
The pure shock on his face when that happens, and the way he reacts to it, kind of slowly backing into the tub and then making fun of his mullet. I don't know. I liked the way that scene played out more than if it had been Mike that was stabbed by the bully and then put into the hospital.
Yeah, I think it was smart to not take a character out of play for the end of the climax of the movie. I think that was a really smart decision.
Yeah.
A good change. There are definitely some great changes that were made to both of these movies from the original text and the mini series that I think definitely make this movie better for it.
Yeah. Here's where the tough conversation comes in. Let's talk.
I know I had a tough time with that going where you're trying to go with the Nightmare on Elm Street thing, but let's try this one.
let's talk about the opening scene.
Oh God. Okay.
You knew we were going to have to talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm surprised. I wasn't, cause I figured it would be part of your takes.
What's funny is, I was going to put it as one of my takes, but then I thought we were going to talk about it.
That's funny. Okay. Well, we can talk about it now because it's not one of my takes.
Okay,
so,
good.
Yeah.
So if you're still listening, you've probably seen the movie. But if you haven't, just to recap, the movie basically kind of opens with a
gay bashing.
Yeah. And it's brutal and it's very unsettling.
I believe it happens in the book similarly.
It does happen in the book, and it's also based on a real
event.
A real event that happened shortly before Stephen King started writing the book.
Okay.
And so there are some people that are saying that the movie exploited a real life event for, you know, for the sake of making a movie, you know, fictionalizing it, glorifying it or whatever. But I kept going back and forth on how I feel about that scene being in the movie. And I think where I've landed is I don't love that it's there, but it does show what small-minded, small-town mentality really is still like. And because Bill Hader's character later doesn't technically come out, but we get the feeling that he's been hiding being gay since he was a kid. It kind of shows why he would be scared in that town to have come out.
Yeah. So first of all, I will say it is a very triggering. It can be a very triggering scene.
Triggering is the word, yeah.
For sure. Especially to see such cute, attractive homosexuals getting...
They were a good-looking couple.
They were. No, I kid about that part. But, I mean, it can be very triggering to see something like that, especially if you, as a gay person, have faced any kind of physical violence or threat of physical violence. This was a very graphic depiction of, I think, what most of us fear could be a worst case scenario for any of us who happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So that part, yeah, there, but I think the purpose of it is to serve, because what pissed me off at first was So the guy who gets gay bashed is the one who ends up dying.
Yeah.
Who gets killed by Pennywise while these gay bashers go off and we never see or hear from them again. But I think that is signifying that the effect that Pennywise and it has is not just on the individuals it terrorizes, but on this entire town.
Yeah.
That evil is just omnipresent in this town, and the creature Pennywise, it feeds on it and I don't know what the word, like, encourages it or like, yeah, helps breed it into the people of the town,
and in service of it was supposed to be like, as he got stronger and stronger as he was coming back, the violence in the town escalates.
Right.
So this is kind of the culmination of how bad it's gotten.
Right. So, I mean, and the Henry Bowers is kind of the main person we see who it really infects and really,
yeah.
Pennywise really just takes advantage of him and brings the violence out of him. We see it with Beverly's father. We see it in a lot of ways that can be very disturbing. I mean, certainly anyone who's suffered any kind of domestic abuse, there's the scene in this movie where Beverly is getting beaten by her husband and,
yeah.
And horrible things are done to her by her father when she's a kid. Like, right. We see a lot of terrible traumas that I think are supposed to be significant because of its presence in, yeah, this town. But yeah, it was a rough way to start the movie.
The interesting thing is that, so in the book, because I have gotten past that point, it goes into so much more detail that the two, the teenagers that are doing the bashing are arrested. There's interrogation in the police department. There's a trial. I mean, so
that's so unnecessary. That's a longer runtime that is not needed. So I'm not going there.
Yeah. All right. All right. You ready? Takes?
Let's do the takes. All We're right. running long on this, yep, one.
What is your gayest take?
Okay. You kind of alluded to it, but did it seem a little weird and rushed making Richie gay?
Yeah. Here's the thing is that, so in the book, it's never actually said.
And in the first movie, it is not alluded to. I was trying to think back. It wasn't, yeah, alluded to at all. And I don't remember it being. You recently rewatched the first one, right?
Yeah.
And I don't.
Not a clue.
Yeah. There's nothing. It just comes up out of nowhere in the middle of this movie.
This is one of those things where you could put this in the category of fan service, because apparently, for years, people who have read the book have speculated it. So it was almost as if they were like, you know what, while we're doing this, let's go ahead and...
But again, if you're going to do it, you gotta allude to it in the first movie.
Right.
It can't just be something that pops up out of nowhere in the second movie.
Yeah.
It furthers that feeling of disconnectedness between the two movies.
Now, the interesting thing is that in the... in the 90s version, again, they never actually say anybody is gay, but it's actually Eddie that they allude to being gay in that movie.
Yeah, the blowjob scene.
Yeah. yeah, he's like still living with his mother, and they just make him extremely feminine.
Did you know, by the way, a little Easter egg. So the woman who plays adult Eddie's wife in this movie is the same woman who plays his mom in the first movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
They did that to really accentuate that he had that whatever issue with his mom.
Yeah. And that was, I have gotten to that part in the book where they kind of explicitly say, you know, he married a woman that was even fatter than his mom. And, yeah, and like,
it's the same actress.
That's hilarious.
Playing her, which I didn't realize till after when I saw some things online, when I was like researching for the episode, yeah, yeah, and everything. I saw that. Isn't that wild? That's crazy.
That's funny casting.
Yeah. That's, yeah, funny. That's real funny.
Okay. Where were we?
Gayest take, talking about Richie.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I agree with you.
Yeah. I feel like it just came out of nowhere. I mean, I'm always pro homosexuality, you know, get them while you got them. But
I mean, he was a stand-up comic.
And I'm done. Okay. What's your gas take, Mike?
Three words. Hey, Muscle Ben.
Right. Do you love how they like made a point to raise his shirt at one point? Yes.
That is one scene that is specifically stuck in my head. Like raising it, even though, you know, they're
thanks, Pennywise.
Even though Pennywise is cutting into his, I'm like, look at that V.
God damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I'd tried to lose weight as a kid, because if not, very hot.
It was.
And it's funny too. So,
and way to give that fat kid from It One some encouragement. Like, if Stephen King wills it, you could be this right? One day too.
Hey, fat boy.
Well, they were all sitting around talking about like, hey, who's playing you when you're an adult? You
know? Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're all bragging like, oh, I got James McAvoy. Oh, I got. Jessica Chastain. He's like, hey, look at this guy.
Right.
That's me.
And I heard him talk in an interview. He's actually got a British accent, so hubba hubba.
The kid or the adult?
The adult.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But
I figured that you might go there.
Yeah,
with that.
You thought that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Shadiest take.
Okay. I'm gonna get to the ending.
Okay.
So to defeat it. / Pennywise.
Yeah.
The losers end up having to bully and belittle it.
Yeah.
To the point where it feels so small that they literally rip its heart out and crush it in front of him.
Yeah.
So the moral of this story is if anyone is making you feel bad or is bullying you, you bully them back so hard that you destroy them, their everything, and make them feel so small that you can literally rip their heart out right in front of them.
Yeah.
That's the moral of the story.
That's the moral of the story.
That we just spent two movies and 5 hours, 5.5 hours learning about.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a little fucked up.
It is. It is very fucked up. It is very fucked up.
It's like, so that's what I took away from this.
Yeah.
Fight evil with evil.
And you're not the only one. I've heard so many people saying that same exact
really?
Thing. Yeah. Yeah.
The ultimate key to defeating Pennywise was to just call him names.
Yeah.
Until he got too
clown!
Sad.
Clown!
Which, okay, why did that even affect him?
Right.
He was a clown.
Right.
And he was a shapeshifter, too. If it really affected him, you could be like, okay, well, I'll just change into something cooler. I'll look like Ben.
Yeah.
This one was literally the opposite of the phrase, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Yeah.
This one, the point was, no, sticks and stones may fend it off for 27 years, but the words,
Yeah.
That's what'll get this murder alien. What is your shadiest take?
So actually I realize now that we already talked about it, but I just said that I could have done without the flashbacks. I think I think it would have helped cut down the movie. And I actually would have, I think, liked to have seen this movie with just the grownups. So who slayed?
I'm going to give it to the person who I feel like is the MVP of both of these movies, since we didn't get to talk about the first one when it came out. And Bill Skarsgård, I think, stepped into a role that was so iconic from Tim Curry and really made it his own. And I think he did such a great job in both movies. He certainly wasn't a weak link at all, even though there were some weaker links in this second part.
Sure.
I thought he was great.
You know what's funny? So I said Bill Hader.
Because he was gay.
No, I just thought he was a very standout, and it didn't hurt that he was gay. But I'm gonna also go along with you on the Skarsgård thing. He did a great job of bridging the movie of that one constant.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say both.
Cool. The Bills.
The Bills.
Except not the guy playing Bill.
Right. Exactly. although he did fine. Anyway. All right. Who was your no ma'am?
My no ma'am is a gentleman by the name of Teach Grant. Do you know who Teach Grant played?
Yes, he's also my no ma'am.
Old Henry Bowers.
Yeah.
One, he did not age well. And two, it was just such an over-the-top.
Way over-the-top.
Performance. Anytime he's on screen, it took me out of it.
And I felt like it didn't really go anywhere, and it wasn't a rewarding part. Like, what happened then to his zombie buddy that, you know, like,
yeah, it's stupid.
That whole part fell flat.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. So I'm going to go on record as saying that there's only one place a drag queen would have fit in this movie, and I want to see if you agree with me.
There's two. So what was the one you said?
Oh, Pennywise.
So yes, that is the obvious answer.
In fact, was it Bianca Del Rio that posed in Pennywise makeup and outfit?
Probably.
Have you seen that picture?
I know Virginia West did Pennywise in... I believe, yeah, Virginia West did Pennywise in Heels of Horror a couple years ago when It Chapter One came out.
Yeah.
And it was really good. If you haven't seen that, look that up. Local drag queen Virginia West, a legend, an icon, if you will. So Pennywise is, of course, a correct answer. There is a second correct answer for this movie, though, and that's the old lady that Jessica Chastain visits in her former house.
Okay.
I feel like that could have been a drag queen, too. Oh. Which technically that was Pennywise. I mean, still.
Right.
I feel like that would have been even more haunting.
Ew.
So, ew. Anyway, but yeah, so the two correct answers
sure.
for this one, yeah.
All right. What did you rate this?
Gosh, I mean, all of our bashing of it makes me feel like I should go lower, but I think my good feelings from the first one lift this one up, make it float, if you will, to three reels. I will give it, because I don't know, I liked it fine enough, and I liked so many of the people in it, and I have such good feelings about the first one. So yeah,
okay,
three reels. I'll give it that.
I went 2.5.
Yeah, I'm so tempted. I feel like I should say that, but I'm glad you're throwing more hate on this than I am.
Yeah, like, if this one had come out first, if the kids' version of the movie was the second part, I probably wouldn't have even given that a chance. But this movie holds it at least a 2.5, like you said, because it's coming off of what that first one gave us.
But what's so great is... the first one stands alone so well, like
right.
we said, that we don't even have to acknowledge the second one
yeah.
to go back and enjoy that first one.
So what I've heard is that Andy Muschietti wants to do a supercut.
No, thanks. I'm good.
I think I would watch it.
No, thanks. I'm good.
If it...
Now, you could... The only way a supercut could work is if you took the flashback scenes out of chapter two and put them in chapter one.
See, but I think what they would end up doing...
Because then it would tie both movies together more seamlessly.
Right. And I think that he would do it more in the style of the book and intersperse the stories more.
No.
Which is how the miniseries did it. It jumped back and forth between timelines. And it works.
Does it? I've never heard anyone describe the miniseries with the two words together. It works.
I mean, it's not difficult to follow, at least, I should say.
That's a high bar. It's a high bar to set, Mike. High praise.
It's not difficult to follow.
Yeah.
Okay. So next week, despite what we just heard out of Tiff, we are going to be talking about The Goldfinch. So, although, like you said, Amanda said that that it wasn't as bad as what Collider said. So maybe we'll enjoy it. So we'll see.
We shall see.
We shall see.
There will be another episode.
Yeah. At least one more. Okay, everybody. Well, if you haven't already, become a real friend and follow us on Twitter at RealGay and RealGay at RealGay Movie Show on Instagram and Facebook. Slide on into our DMs. Also, wherever you listen, iTunes, Stitcher, Google, or Spotify, please subscribe and give us some feedback. That is it for this week. That is it for this week. Have a real gay day.